Welcome to the live book business webinar, Get All Your Products to Market Faster with HTML-Based Structured Content, sponsored by Inkling. I'm Dennis Wilson, Editor-in-Chief of Book Business, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. And now to get started, we're here today to examine how implementing HTML-based structured content can enable publishers of all sizes to get all of their products, both print and digital, to market faster. And we have two great speakers that we're happy to have join us today to explore this topic. First, we have Mary Konzaki, Executive Program Manager for McGraw-Hill Education. Mary manages a team of project managers who design, develop, and deliver core ebook and assessment content for business management, marketing, and CIT course areas. Mary and her team are reimagining traditional workflows to align with the changing delivery needs of the higher education market. With a focus on course-specific content readiness, her team is using structured content to consistently and accurately scale the creation and delivery of learning resources to customers. We also have Dana Lindsay, Manager of Enablement at Inkling. Dana joined Inkling's content team in 2011 and now manages the Enablement team. Her cross-functional team of content strategists, front-end designers, and content engineers work to onboard new clients to Inkling's platform so they can build and distribute great content. Dana and team have decreased clients' go-to-market time by more than 50% with improved production workflows that leverage the power of structured content and cloud-based publishing tools. So I'll now turn it over to you, Dana. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Dennis. Hi, everybody, and thank you very much for attending our webinar today. My name is Dana Lindsay, and I've been working at Inkling for the past 4 years. I'm a big believer in the value of structured content, and I'm really excited to share some thoughts on the topic with you guys today. Throughout the presentation, I'll introduce a few fundamental concepts, and my co-presenter, Mary, will weigh in to provide additional information and anecdotes along the way. And towards the end of the webinar, Mary will also provide a deep dive on her and her team's recent experiences adapting to an HTML-based workflow at McGraw-Hill. So let's go ahead and get started. So thinking about what we'll discuss today, the problem we're here to discuss is how we can get better products to market faster. The solution that I'd like to propose to that is adopting an HTML-based structured content-based workflow. And the components of that are going to, if you make that sort of change, you're going to have to make adaptations to your workflow, to the way your team thinks about approaching their jobs, and also to the type of content that you're producing. At the end, again, Mary will go through and give us a deep dive on her recent experiences at McGraw-Hill, and we'll summarize things and then have some time for Q&A. So the big problem in publishing right now that we're hearing a lot of is how can publishers of all sizes get better products to market faster? And it's important to note that this is coming up a lot now because consumer expectations are changing. So consumers really expect content to expand beyond the book today. It's not enough to simply deliver content in the traditional model that we've been using in the past. People really expect both print and digital products. And what those products look like and how you interact with them is changing beyond simply flipping pages or buying a book in a bookstore. As that's happening, content still needs to be credible over time. And our expectations for credibility are changing a bit too. So, you know, historically, content needed to be error-free and high quality, and that is certainly still true. But content also has to be up-to-date now. So when we think of two-year or multi-year editioning cycles, people are losing patience with that. They want their information to be credible and up-to-date whenever they go to look at it. And finally, content has to be easily accessible. So we can think about content being surrounded by barriers to entry, and we want to make those barriers as low as possible. So consumers want to be able to access information when they need it, where they need it, and on whatever device they happen to have handy. And those expectations are just becoming really common today. And when we think about digital content, our views of digital and the importance of digital have changed tremendously as well. So initially, a few years ago, we might have thought of digital as a nice to have or an add-on to your print content, but now digital is rapidly becoming a must-have. If you look at stats, consumers are averaging over 5 hours per day with digital content and only about 32 minutes with print. So that's a huge shift that's just taking place right now. And when people are looking at that digital content, people are really stepping up their game for the content they're delivering. So digital content needs to be delightful. It has to be intuitive and easy to use. It needs to be beautiful. And perhaps ideally it should be interactive or take advantage of some of the opportunities you have with digital content that we didn't previously have with print. So consumers are really expecting a professional digital product, and digital content needs to be treated as such. And it's important to note that competition is really encroaching from some non-traditional threats for publishing. So there are web-based resources that are gaining credibility where books used to reign supreme. If you think about Khan Academy as an educational resource, or cooking blogs or travel websites, people are going different places to get access to information. And sources that we all, I think, used to scoff at in the past, things like Wikipedia, are offering really up-to-date information. And other sources like Google search offer extremely low barriers to entry. So people are used to these expectations that you can get accurate information right at your fingertips. And the amount of digital activity really just continues to grow every day. In 1 second, I mean, these stats are pretty outrageous, but people are conducting tens of thousands of Google searches and watching hundreds of thousands of YouTube videos and sending and receiving millions of emails, which I'm sure all of you are very familiar with the growth and scale of. So how do we keep up with this? How can publishers of all sizes keep up with these trends and get better products and more products to market faster? So today we're here to talk about HTML-based structured content, and that is, again, the solution that we would propose to approaching this topic. So to review some of the challenges we're looking to solve here, publishers need a way to create more products faster. We have to expand beyond just a print book and create multiple products, perhaps. Those products need to be kept up to date. And what we create still needs to be delightful and engaging for the user. So we want to create something really high quality and really professional. And we would argue here at Inkling that this is possible with structured content, and right on the heels of structured content has to be the right tools and workflow. So it's one thing to say you want to pursue this new goal, and it's another to recognize that in order to do so, you might need some new tools and some new skills or some new workflows to support what you're trying to produce. So let's take a step back for a second and think about structured content. What does that mean? So structured content can be defined as semantic content that has been separated from its display. So that may be true, but let's take a step back and dig into exactly what that means. When we think about structured content in Inkling, we think of HTML as our structure and CSS as the style that you layer on top of that structure. Those are two different languages that work together really nicely to present information in a beautiful presentation, but they're both conveying different types of information. They're just working together. So to think about this in a less technical way, let's picture a house. So when you're building a new home, you have to consider a bunch of things. But for starters, you have to consider the foundation and the frame and the plumbing, and those are just practical and necessary step ones that you need to pursue when you're building a home. And then once you have that foundation in place, you can layer surface level embellishments on top. So you can paint the rooms, and you can put up new lights, and you can put in plants and other decorations. And those can be optimized to suit your taste and your needs and be appropriate for wherever your house may be. And the color of paint applied to the wall, it doesn't change the fact that that wall is a wall. And because style is distinct from structure, you can decide to change the color of the wall in a few years, perhaps when you realize lime green wasn't the right color for your living room, and you won't have to knock down the wall to do it. You can simply layer on a new bit of style, and the structure is maintained. So by building your content as structured HTML, you're able to create great content that is flexible and can be used for various outputs, both print and digital. And you can also future-proof your content. So you're creating a structure that you can adapt the display or the presentation of over time as new content models come up or new distribution options appear. So to take a step back, I know Mary and the McGraw-Hill team have been thinking a lot about these topics recently. And Mary, I was hoping you could share with us, how have you seen attitudes shift in the last few years at major publishing organizations like McGraw-Hill? How are you guys thinking about structured content and how has that changed?
Sure, Dana. So as far as seeing attitudes shift over the years, I would just say that in the past, content structure was a topic that applied to a much smaller group of people. The technical system programmers were the ones who were immersed in defining the structure. Possibly when it was talked about, people might say things like, yeah, that sounds great, let's do it, without really understanding what the impact of it would have on how we were delivering our materials to our customers. And when I say this, I'm pretty much talking for myself. I'm not trying to be judgy to other people out there who weren't aware. But now there's so many more team members who are aware of the structure and many different functional players. Pretty much everyone who is working with our content or who is touching it in some way is responsible for making sure that it's effective. This doesn't mean that everybody is a code expert now, but people just have a greater understanding of what the structure is and why it's important. With the workflows we're starting to put into place, we're seeing that the impact this structure can have on how we're building and delivering our content is great. We also believe that this is going to have a positive impact on how our customers are engaging with our products. And really, that's one of our overall goals for doing it. Does that answer your question, Dina?
Yeah, that's great. And I'm glad you touched on workflow, because we'll dive into that now. And
Dana, can I ask one quick question that's coming from the audience? I thought it might be helpful. Could you explain just briefly the difference between an HTML-first workflow and an XML-first? Because I know people are more familiar with XML. Maybe it would be helpful to draw a comparison there.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, and forgive me, I am not the most senior technical person that you guys could ask this question, so feel free to continue to ask these questions to other people in the future. But I would say XML is primarily a storage format, so it's not really made to be previewable easily and to be viewable by people who don't speak and think in code. It's really a machine, a language that was built for machines. And HTML is the language of the modern web, so it's meant to be code that is rapidly previewable and viewable by people and easily styled. So it's just a little bit more accessible. It's still obviously a technical language, but it's made to go hand in hand with a human readable preview.
Okay, thank you.
Great. So let's jump into workflow. So to Mary's point, the structured content thing sounds pretty great in theory, but how do you get there? Where do you start, particularly when your whole team might not be a bunch of coding experts? So the catch to remember here is that structured content is code, and that can feel a little bit intimidating at first. It's perhaps not something that everyone is immediately familiar with, but it's important to acknowledge that when you're aiming to build a new set of products with a new set of tools, you might need to learn some new skills or have new supporting workflows and information geared towards those goals. So many people in your pre-submitted questions noted, wait a minute, I don't know HTML, so is there a way for me to create content that is based in HTML, or do I have to learn all these new skills today? Here at Inkling, we acknowledge that content creators often don't know HTML, and, you know, nor should they. It's okay that people have different strengths, and not all of us are going to wake up and be a developer. So something that we believe in is pursuing WYSIWYG authoring platforms. And WYSIWYG, just for a moment, stands for what you see is what you get. So a WYSIWYG environment is something that enables users to preview and edit their content in familiar views. All the while, the system will be translating your edits and everything that you're doing into structured code on the back end. But the presentation for the content creator should feel pretty similar to things like Microsoft Word, things you're familiar with using today. And you don't have to worry that what you're creating is really rich, meaningful, machine-readable structure. It's just happening behind the scenes. So the big push of these types of tools is that they enable non-technical users to create structured content without needing to know how to code. So when we think about why using these kinds of tools could be beneficial, I think there are four big reasons. One that we'll talk a lot about today is having the opportunity to pursue this create once, publish everywhere dream. So everybody wants to work on the content in one place and shoot it out to a bunch of different endpoints without needing to make edits in each of those distribution options. Another is that when you're using WYSIWYG cloud-based tools, you can pursue concurrent workflows. And we'll dig in a little bit more in detail to what these mean exactly. But basically, you can change the way you work to achieve some new efficiency gains. You can collaborate more effectively. We would argue that when you're working in a cloud-based tool, everybody can pitch in and jump in at any time, and you don't have to worry about which version of a document you're looking at or getting access to the material that is on someone else's machine. And then finally, you can produce new editions and new products more efficiently. So again, we'll really talk about why that's possible in this new model. So again, there's a lot to chew on here, so let's dig into these topics a little bit more one by one. As previously stated, when you're creating structured content, you can create multiple products simultaneously. So this create once, publish everywhere mantra. So personally, I think this is the fundamental value proposition of structured content. We have here a diagram to sort of simplify this fact, but the idea that you can throw a bunch of assets into one format and then spit them out to a bunch of other formats on the other side means that once you get into that cloud-based format, you have one canonical source of your content, and it can be sent out to multiple places. So I was reading a blog recently on this topic, and Anne Rockley described structured content saying, simply put, intelligent content is content which is not limited to one purpose, technology, or output. It's content that is structurally rich and semantically aware, and therefore discoverable, reusable, reconfigurable, and adaptable. So you have the opportunity to put some meaning and some bones into your content so that you can change the way it's used over time. Building structured content, I should say, enables you to export to multiple channels. So that could be print and digital. That could be EPUB and app-based distribution. That could be to iPhones and tablets. Many different options for how you can send your content out today. And you can have high-quality products in all of these spaces that feel appropriate for that device or for that distribution channel. So we really want to strive towards creating device-agnostic content. And with the right tools and workflow, distinct parts of previously serialized workflows can take place simultaneously. So this is where we start to see some efficiency gains. One example we can talk through that many of you will be familiar with is in a traditional print workflow, you use different tools for authoring than you do for things like composition and structuring. So you might use Microsoft Word to create a manuscript, and then your authors will hand that off to another team that will go ahead and do the layout and finessing in InDesign. And those are very distinct parts of the process. And since those are distinct and different tools are used, they need to take place in a serialized manner. So the manuscript has to be complete before that file can be sent over to be styled. And there's no way to layer those two moments on top of one another. They really have to take place one after the other. But the beauty of new tools and new approaches to content creation today is that it really doesn't have to be that way anymore. If we can provide authors with a means of creating structured content, designers can jump in and globally update the visual appearance of that content at any time. And this can happen concurrently with authoring. It can happen at the beginning of the process. It can happen at the end of the process. You have a lot more flexibility with when people can get in and collaborate together on a project. So we would argue that this kind of effective collaboration leads both to faster development but also to increased creativity. So if you're able to get more of your teammates involved in working and contributing to a project, and again, reducing the barrier to entry for how they do that, they can spend less time FTPing files around and downloading and uploading and looking at the wrong versions of documents, and more time communicating and brainstorming and iterating on what they're creating. So we think that this is a really powerful way to create better, more creative products. And teammates are able then to jump in and contribute specialized skill sets at the right place, at the right time. So again, your designer can jump in when it's appropriate and the rest of the time go off and work on other projects, and the author can dip in and out whenever it's appropriate to make edits. So more access and easier updates leads to increased creativity and better products. And once you have structured content, you'll save a ton of time when you go about creating new editions or new products of the future. So thinking of new editions for starters, today if you want to build a new edition of a print product, that often requires taking your final InDesign files and exporting them back out to Word so an author can work in a tool they're comfortable with, and then going back through that composition process and getting them back into InDesign so you can print. So there's many hurdles to jump in that process. But if you're creating structured content and working in a tool that's accessible to your authors and your designers, you can start a new edition fresh, right from the previous one, and just change only what needs to be changed. Is that some of the content? Is that moving the order of information around? Is that adding new art or changing the design? Regardless, you can just focus on the things that need changing, and everything else can remain the same. So this is where really dramatic time savings begin to kick in. We hope that, and we've seen that people can achieve time savings in their first editions, but I expect to see those grow tremendously when you start to think about editions of the future as well. And it's also important that we think of new products. So right now we think of Kindle books, and we think of iBooks, and we think of the tablets and phones that we're used to today, but new products are coming out all the time, and the content that we're creating today may one day need to be presented on a watch or on Google Glass or on something that is frankly pretty hard for us to imagine. And adding that structure up front means that we don't have to know exactly where we're going, but we know that we'll be able to adapt our content more efficiently to be appropriate for those new product models. So again, I talked a little bit about seeing success with clients in the past, and I just wanted to throw some stats out here so you know I'm not totally making this up, but Kaplan, a partner that we've worked with in the past, went through and structured a bunch of their content using a WYSIWYG authoring tool and adapting their workflow. And as a result, they were able to reduce their digital production time by 52%, so getting to market 16 weeks faster. And what was even more exciting, perhaps, is that they also reduced their print production time. So there are efficiencies to be gained for all products by adapting your workflow, not just the new digital ones that you're interested in pursuing. So let's now talk a little bit about your team. How can you enable your team of editorial users to build structured content? Workflows and concepts only work if you have your team on board and if people are excited to adapt and willing to try something new out. So this is one of the most daunting aspects of changing your business towards a structured content model. You have to actually influence everyone to come along with you and believe that you're headed in the right direction. So we wanted to offer some tips for onboarding authors. And again, we could spend a whole webinar talking about these topics, but we'll just touch on them for starters here, and we can share some information after the webinar too to provide some more detail. But these are some recommendations I would put out there when you're hoping to onboard authors to a new product model and a new workflow and tools. First is to demonstrate strong executive sponsorship. So as the leader of a new initiative, it's important to be both positive and pragmatic about what you're trying to do. And remember that while you've spent a long time attending webinars and reading blogs and talking to your peers and considering making this jump, your authors might have been left out of that process. So they might need a bit of a crash course in understanding why you're making the move to this new model and why you're pursuing structured content. And then I think that making sure your authors understand what problems you're hoping to solve is really valuable, and providing informed support for them will increase their willingness, basically, to jump in and try something new. Another method would be to build their excitement. So there's a lot to be gained from the authoring perspective by moving to a structured content-based model. Some really easy and relatable goals here could be the ease of pushing content updates or the ease of getting your fingertips on your content and making changes at any point in the process. Opportunities for adding enhancement for digital products and really taking advantage of opportunities available in digital. And pursuing faster editioning cycles, so letting the authors get their voices and their information out into the world more frequently are all things that could really help build the excitement that authors feel when they're approaching these kinds of changes. I say all that with the next point in mind, which is being realistic. So no matter how excited everybody might be, transitioning can be challenging. Going to a new tool, learning a new workflow, testing out ideas that you were certain would work and maybe kind of work is all time-consuming and somewhat challenging. So I think you can ease any transition by setting realistic timelines and making it clear to your entire team and to yourself that you expect new tools to come with an initial learning curve. You expect there to be some bumps and some lessons learned along the way. But if you leave time for that, your authors and your vendors and your teams can explore new tools and explore new approaches without the stress of a deadline at all times, and they'll be able to better adapt and try out new things. When you think about, again, workflow is really important, but you want to make sure any new tool or any new product model you're pursuing is supported by a workflow that's associated with it. So it's important that people know how new tools and new models fit into their day-to-day work. You know, what does this mean for me? Is really something that workflow can help answer, and people can know exactly how they can contribute in this new world. So empowering your teams with clearly defined workflows and then letting them loose in new tools and in new in pursuit of new products is really important. And then finally, providing support. So anytime you're transitioning, it can be intimidating, and it's important that people know that they're supported. It's important that they have escalation paths when they're confused and that they know how to avoid common pitfalls and unnecessary frustration, just not leaving people out to dry, essentially. So I recently had the opportunity to work with Mary and her team to onboard author Michael Windelspecht into a structured content-based workflow, and he was using Inklings with eWig authoring tool Habitat. And after going through this transition, Michael reflected on the benefits of this approach, basically saying he doesn't have to focus on the textbook as much anymore, but he can reflect on the ability to quickly add changes and update his information so that it's up to date and it's current. And that was really exciting to him. So that was something that when he was going through the process of learning a new tool, it was helpful to keep in the back of his mind that he was excited about some part of this process personally. And we'll talk to you a little bit about vendors. So I know a lot of your organizations are working on producing new content, and it's both your authoring and editorial teams as well as your vendors. So it's important with vendors, I think, to set an example, to make sure that you're presenting requests to them that you've tried yourself or you have an idea of how they should work. So you know that you can tell when it's done well and you can provide feedback on what might be confusing. We're big believers at Inkling on quality metrics, so establishing exactly what you expect, documenting what you expect, and then making sure that you hold governance meetings or check-ins or follow the quality that's being delivered so you can really assess whether or not your vendor is performing to your liking or not. And frankly, so you can hold yourself to the standards that you've set as well. We talk a little bit about encouraging vendor teams to specialize. There's a lot of turnover in a lot of vendor organizations, so to counteract that risk of losing a bunch of information in a team that's changing, you can specialize what people are responsible for knowing and nominate sort of leaders for different types of tasks. Maybe there are editorial teams that are responsible for checking for typos that are distinct from functionality teams that have to check if digital linking works properly. And by making that kind of specialization, you can narrow down where problems are coming from and correct them much more easily. Another bucket would be training, mentoring, and auditing. So when you roll out anything new to your vendors, we like to think of these distinct phases where you're teaching something new, you're providing then hands-on mentorship to provide feedback and let them ask questions and see what's going on, and then you're moving to an auditing model, which means they should be good to go, and you're kind of sitting back and checking in every now and then to make sure they're still delivering a high-quality product. And then finally, as with anything, I think encouraging open communication, so making sure that you have a means of communicating frequently with your vendors and making sure that you have some means of gathering questions. So many vendor orgs won't proactively ask questions necessarily, so it's important that you set a tone for encouraging questions to be asked rather than people making up an answer and feeling intimidated about checking in. So these are, you know, just some themes that I would encourage people consider when they're onboarding new new authors and new vendors to new methods of producing content. And Mary, your team is right in the thick of this kind of transition. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit about how you guys have approached your vendor and author relationships and how you've gotten everybody excited about these kinds of changes.
Sure. Perfect timing for this question, Dana, not only because it will give you a chance to stop talking for a couple of minutes, but also we are right in the middle of this transformation. In managing these relationships is something that we have very high on our priority list. We want to make sure that we can effectively transition to this new authoring model. I'll address the vendor piece first. We have traditionally long-standing procedures and workflows and efficient ways of working with our vendors. We're finding ourselves now that all of a sudden we're working with our vendors in brand new ways. We're working with new teams, we're building new relationships, and we're developing new skill sets. Because of the changing workflows and the changing expectations facing all of us, we need to keep these relationships with our vendors very collaborative. We're finding that we need the vendor's expertise just as much as they need ours right now. So we're just, like you said, we're really trying to keep those lines of communication open. From the author side of things, many of our authors have been asking us for a more efficient and effective way for them to author their material and to update their existing content. So getting our authors excited and on board with the concept of this new way of working hasn't really been as challenging as you might expect, but the concept is one thing. Actually getting our authors into the system and getting them thinking about authoring differently from both a content and a workflow perspective, that just can be downright scary. We're at a point where many of our authors are being brought into the system for the first time. To help us with this and to try to keep our author teams and all of us excited, we have structured training and supporting documentation that we've put into place. We also have teams of people who are available, like you mentioned, to support the authors and to answer their questions and to define the workflows that make the most sense for their projects. And again, maintaining open communication and responding to questions and training needs quickly is going to help us keep our authors excited about the changes at our doorstep. So I'm going to let you talk some more, Dana.
Great. Thank you, Mary. Yeah, it's sure. Again, these are really fun transitions to watch and to be a part of, but it is good to recognize that it doesn't happen overnight, but you can start to see some really exciting shifts pretty early on if you set up the right framework. So the last theme that I'll touch on here is just a bucket of content considerations. So how can structuring your content get you to market faster? And I think that one of the biggest things here is that when you're making this kind of shift, when you're adapting the way you're going to approach your content, you want to have some idea of where you're going and why, which makes sense. You want to if you look at the world right now, it feels like there's a new device or a new distribution option popping up every day, and it's hard to know where to get started if you feel like the future is a little bit hazy. But the beauty of structured content is that you don't have to have everything figured out before you get started. You're really structuring your content in order to preserve flexibility for future content models and future devices. So it's okay not to know where everything's headed and not to know exactly what's going to win out between mobile devices and tablets or different browsers or different digital distribution, you know, stores. So digital content, I recently read, it needs to be free. It should be able to go anywhere where people want it. And when you think about creating content that can translate to different environments, the more structure you have up front, the more flexibility you have to reinvent it in the future, both in design and presentation and in the type of content you're sending to different kinds of devices. Maybe you send a whole book to a web page and you only send an outline or snippets to a watch. So the more structure you put in your content, the more freedom you have to do that, you know, be flexible in the future. And every type of content is really different. And so it's not as if there's one playbook to consider when you're thinking about changing to a new product model. But we did want to leave by suggesting five things that you could do to get started, regardless of what, you know, whether you're writing cookbooks or biology books or children's books or whatever. You could consider these kinds of themes when thinking about this change. So the first is, what overall product goal are you building towards? Again, this is a real cornerstone of making this kind of change, both because you want to have something to come back to remember what's the point, why are we excited, why are we doing this, and you also want to have something to aim for and know, like, are we on track? Does this feel in line with what we set out to do? There has to be some sort of goalpost that you can trend towards. The second is sort of considering today what inputs and outputs are most important for your content. And, you know, we talk a lot about creating once and publishing everywhere and the fact that your content can be flexible, but it's also worth noting that you can't optimize for everything. So if you're optimizing for every device and every screen size, that's really the same as optimizing for nothing. So you might want to take a stab at saying, you know what, we think most users are going to access our content on the web or on their tablet. Start designing for that, see how it goes, get some analytics to see how people really are viewing your content, and then adjust your strategy over time. You can put more time into the devices and the outputs that are really important to your users. Thinking about the legacy assets that you have is really important. So when you're going to do something new, that doesn't mean you have to throw out everything you have today. Whether that's, you know, your manuscripts or old editions of content, as well as like supplemental assets that a lot of people have sitting and kind of growing dusty in digital warehouses, you can really bring that stuff to life again and go grab images and videos and sound bites that maybe you haven't been able to make great use of in the past. And then thinking about how to translate your assets from print into digital formats, or at least into device or output agnostic formats, is really important. So, you know, a lot of people want to find a one-to-one conversion where you can hit a button and get a print book to translate over into an ebook. But it's a little bit more challenging than that if you want to create a high-quality product. You really want to think about what's still relevant when you go to a digital model. Page breaks are less relevant if someone's scrolling through content in a single scroll. And two-page layouts are less relevant if there aren't two pages side by side. So thinking about how you can adapt your content a little bit goes a long way in making sure it's going to be a high-quality product no matter where it's viewed. And finally, thinking about how to meaningfully enhance your content. This is something I personally harp on a lot, which is it's awesome that there are so many ways to enhance your content and make it great, but just because you can enhance something doesn't always mean that you should. We can think of, you know, early web pages in the 90s with blinking buttons and loud colors, and just because it's possible to make something animated and enhanced doesn't mean it's always aiding the learning experience or making something more engaging. So really learning about what opportunities there are for enhancement and pursuing ones that are the most meaningful for you is very important. So with all this change, I thought it would be nice if we kick it over to Mary, who can give us more of a practical understanding of how this is going at McGraw-Hill and, you know, what's going well and what bumps they're working through right now.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dana. Hi, everyone. Now that Dana has done such a great job of educating us on the benefits of structured content, I'm going to go into a bit of detail on how we at McGraw-Hill are building and using our structured content. I will share some examples of where we were not too long ago, where we are today, what we've learned along the way, and where we think we need to be going. So let's get started with where we were. In the past, our main focus was output. Like Dana mentioned earlier, we had a serial workflow. We finalized our print product, and then we started the production work on the ebook. And even though the content was very often the same between the two deliveries, we used different workflows that separated the print and ebook material as soon as the respective processes began. And I'm sure the inefficiencies are obvious here, but I'm going to provide an example of why some of the efficiencies got lost in this process. So once we had the final files ready for our print product, our vendors would then add custom styles to each ebook to try to make it resemble the print layout. This customization of the ebook often made it necessary for us to review and revise layout on a case-by-case basis. It also meant that our vendors were applying their own rules to this process. And instead of easily following rules that could be applied to all ebook content or even across all of our vendors. So as you can imagine, these workflows were time-consuming and they were costly. Also, because of the different workflows and the platforms we used for finalizing the print and ebook content, any updates that we made to the material needed to be made in two places. The need for us to make the same content updates in multiple platforms at multiple times was also not efficient or cost-effective. So what has all of this taught us so far? Among the lessons that we've learned along the way include the need for us to author once, deliver anywhere. Dana mentioned that this is really kind of the fundamental principle of structured content. We have learned that we need to focus on content finalization and not output finalization. Both of these points supported our need to move away from having separate workflows for the different delivery needs of our core content. To get ready for this new approach, we've been starting to look at how we're setting up our content. And instead of thinking about books and chapters, we're thinking about chunking our content differently, perhaps in sections and learning outcomes. Instead of reinventing the wheel each time, we learned that the more consistency we can build into our workflows and our code-based structure, the more predictable our outcomes will be. So I think these are some valuable lessons, and I know we have a lot more to learn as we continue with our transformation. So what have we done with all these discoveries? That brings us to where we are now. Having learned what we've learned, we now have a singular product vision that everyone can rally around. That vision from McGraw-Hill is to provide learning resources to students that give them everything they need to succeed in their course. To help us achieve this, we're building out content with a foundation of structured HTML. At the very fundamental level, we believe that structuring our content this way is going to give us the ability to help students learn better. We're also in the middle of implementing Habitat as our authoring tool for our core content. What Habitat's doing for us is it's enabling us to structure our content in a predictable and yet flexible way, and it's offering us a consistent, digitally friendly design. It's also helping us achieve our goal of authoring once and delivering everywhere. I'm going to talk a little bit more about where we are now, but with an emphasis on what's happening with specifically with our content, our workflows, and our team dynamics. We have found that it's not always easy for our teams to move away from the book paradigm when authoring in Habitat. We need to focus on content readiness and less on paging format, design, and output. Questions about margins, multiple columns, and image bleeds have come up repeatedly during our first few projects that we're working on in Habitat. These are all book-related items. We need to remember that we'll have time later to finalize the print product, but first we need to use Habitat to focus on getting our content ready. We're finding that collaboration is key with our internal teams, as many of the traditional development and production responsibilities begin to blur. For example, our production team's driving the implementation of Habitat for us. This means that they're involved much earlier in the process, and they're making decisions about achieving authoring, development, content finalization, and assembly timelines. These are things they haven't necessarily needed to think about much in the past. So similar to what I said earlier about the book paradigm, our workflows are also in transition because of the tools, the environment, and the need to think about our content readiness as opposed to just our output. An ongoing theme through all of this, and we talked about it a little bit earlier with Dana, and Dana mentioned it too, is that our authors are going to need our continued support. So just overall, where we are now, just enacting this change and thinking differently have become a part of our daily lives. Things are moving very quickly, and flexibility and the need for us to react and adjust our plans on the fly are just becoming more and more common for us and our teams. So that brings us to where we're going. We know that we have to continue to reimagine all of our traditional workflows to accomplish the digital goals we have set for ourselves. We also need to continue to build skill sets within our teams and to be able to support and get ahead of all the changing content and customer needs that are facing us right now. We need to scale the use of structured code to all of our content types. It hasn't all been as easy as pie. We're seeing some challenges with certain complex content types. We're thinking that we may need to even introduce some custom styles in the interim while we look for ways to define how these complexities can be structured using the HTML. I misspelled that. It's just letters. We want to evaluate our content revision process and find ways to update our content more easily. Dana talked about this earlier too. We don't want to have to reinvent the wheel with each revision. And of course, we hope to be able to improve our speed to market and reduce the overall cost of updating our content. We're really at the beginning stages right now, so we don't necessarily have a story on how much time we've saved, but we certainly see the potential in how we're working and the new workflows we have that there's going to be time and cost savings. And anytime you can introduce efficiencies and save money and time, that frees up these resources and you can use them elsewhere. So just a few other considerations, and these are just some overarching themes that are related to our ability to scale. We're scaling our new way of thinking, but also our approach to our content needs. Again, I'm going to repeat this because I think it's worth repeating, but we know we need to continue to closely monitor author onboarding, training, and support. We need to enhance the efficiency and effectiveness of the tools to make sure that we're using them in a smart way. And we need to continue to collaborate with our vendors on training and their ability to effectively scale with us. So that wraps up what I wanted to share about where McGraw-Hill is with this transformation into using a code-based structured content for our authoring needs. I appreciate you guys listening, and I am going to pass this back to Dina.
Great. Thank you, Mary. Thank you for walking us through that and touching a little bit more in practice on how these themes are coming to light at McGraw-Hill. We'll breeze through some key takeaways here so we have some time for Q&A at the end. But let's start to think about hearing all these themes and these examples today. How can you get started now? How can people begin to take action on these topics? The key takeaways that I would suggest today is that if you're going to make the leap to structured content successfully, there are some things that you need to have in place, and that would be supporting tools and workflow that make it possible for the people you have today to use the skills and expertise they have and be successful building a new kind of product. You'll need buy-in from your team to make sure that people are not only able, but they are willing to make that kind of change and feel sort of enthusiastic about doing so. And finally, a vision for the future of your content. And again, this doesn't have to be the one and only vision that your content will ever have, but a starting point. Where do you want to go for your first stab? What do you want to test out? What makes you excited about making this change? And what hypotheses are you interested in testing? And then you can continue to adapt that mission as you go. And by structuring your content using HTML to do so, you can really create and update great content for various outputs using the same workflow and using one flow of creative collaboration to shoot that content out wherever you need it. And again, you can future-proof your content for new additions and new product models and distribution strategies to come. So just to wrap things here, we'll do one exercise. So if you're sitting here trying to figure out if you're sure or not that the structured content thing is for you, I encourage you to do the following. Think about how many tools your content has to pass through before it gets to the distribution phase. You could think of Word or InDesign or maybe Quark or something, or XML people have mentioned. But we get really used to the workflows we use today, and sometimes it's good to step back and think about just how complicated our workflows may be, even if we're used to them. Two would be, think about how many end user devices and screen sizes you're supporting now. Where can your users access your content? And how many do you want to support? When you think about where people want to get their content and what devices they're using, are you everywhere you want to be or need to be? And how do you want to start to transition? And finally, think about how many stakeholders are involved in creating and approving content, and how many tools you use to bring those stakeholders in at the right time and for their appropriate skill sets. So right now you're probably licensing and utilizing a bunch of different tools so that people can contribute effectively to your development cycles. And if you move to a more, you know, standardized model of structuring your content and more standardized tools to do so, you can bring all those people in together into the same environment, and collaboration and creativity can really shine. So we'll take a little time for questions, but I just wanted to say finally thank you again for listening to us, and I know Mary and I and folks from Inkling and McGraw-Hill will be eager to follow up and continue the discussion with anyone who's interested.
Great. Thanks, Dana, and thanks, Mary. That was great. Yeah, any questions we don't get to here, we can, you know, we can certainly follow up. So I encourage you to plug in your questions if you have them. So I'm going to go to some of the questions that have come over during the presentation. And this one, the first one here, it speaks a little bit to, I mean, you both talked about the concept behind creating once and publishing in many places, but could you give one example of how, or speaking to print specifically, how does that work? How do you create an HTML and then create a print output? What's the steps there?
Yeah. I can jump in for starters. That's a great question. So when trying to figure out how you can get content that is in HTML format to go back to print, there are a variety of ways you can do so. Here at Inkling, we have a tool called Habitat that Mary and I have mentioned that people use to create HTML-based content. And with that tool, there is an option, for example, to export your HTML out to PDF. So for some cases, that method is appropriate to getting a print product out from the system and taking it out wherever you need to go. There are also cases where people are creating a really sophisticated print product. So it's not enough to simply export what you have on the screen in digital format and call it a day. You might want to do a lot of finessing on your print product and make sure pagination and those things like the two-page layout and the two-column threads are appropriate for your content. So we have partners who also convert their content out into InDesign. So they pour the content from HTML into InDesign, and then in InDesign, they just take care of the really print-specific tweaks. So the layout of the content, the placement of things like figures and sidebars, all of that stuff that is really just appropriate for that one output takes place in a tool that is appropriate for that one output. And everything else that should be applied to the content, no matter what output it's going to, like changes to the text, would be made upstream in the WYSIWYG authoring tool.
Great, thanks for clarifying that. Mary, this is a question for you. Why did McGraw, and you spoke to the broad, you know, strategy behind it, but this question is, why did McGraw-Hill choose structured HTML over XML, and does that completely replace XML?
Well, that's a great question. So we chose the HTML structure that was built into the Habitat authoring platform. We really liked what that platform was offering us in order to get our content finalized regardless of output. So like Dana just mentioned, there are options of going out to print, and then but the plan of using that is we're finalizing all of the words and all the content within the system, and then we're starting the different types of outputs from there. I don't think we have much of a need anymore for XML, but I could be wrong. So I could find out an answer to that, and I can send the answer out to everybody.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask another question, and either of you can probably answer this, but when you have content with lots of pictures and illustrations, how does that affect the flow and the use of a structured content approach?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And this really circles back, I think, to the theme we touched on earlier of translation. So it's okay that you your content shouldn't look identical on every screen. That's not in my mind, that's really not the point of Create Once, Publish Everywhere. It isn't that all your content has to be dumbed down to just work no matter where it goes. It's that your content should be adaptable so that it can present itself attractively no matter where it is. So some themes that come up in HTML are things like reflowability and the fact that your content will adjust to shrink or expand as your screen size grows or shrinks. So if you're looking at content on a web page, the text will and images can go all the way from one side to the other, and if you're on an iPhone, your layout might adapt. So one example that comes to mind that's pretty fun is we've seen McGraw right now using a type of CSS styling that makes their images appear side by side if they're on a widescreen, and then reflow so they are stacked one on top of the other if someone's looking at the content on their phone, for example. So building in structure to your content means you can target styles that are smart enough to know what device or what screen size the content's being displayed on at a given moment.
I see. Thank you. And another, we have time for a couple more questions, so I'll try to get to these. This question is about asking for some more specificity around what are the supporting tools, the WYSIWYG HTML structuring tools. How do publishers start to investigate what is out there for them to use for that? What are they, and what are these supporting tools, and how do they find them?
Yeah. That's a great question too, and I will say obviously I know a lot about one particular tool more than others, so I'm probably a bit biased, but I encourage people to look up Inkling Habitat for starters and learn a little bit more about what that tool offers and test it out, see if you like it, and also Google things like WYSIWYG authoring tool or cloud-based collaboration, these catchphrases that come up a lot, and see what other tools are offered and what value propositions they present for why their tool is great. I think Habitat is really exceptional for users or for teams who want non-technical users to be able to create structured content and for people who really want to create a supreme digital offering. So if you really want to create something great for your digital outputs, Habitat is a great fit. If digital is not really the thing you're focused on and you're thinking more about print, then there are probably other tools out there that are also are great for other priorities. So I think this is one of those moments where a good Google search is a good place to start. And looking at blogs and things that talk about content strategy, I think, is probably also a good place to start research.
Great. Thank you, Dana. One more question. And this is for you, Mary. Could you give a general idea of how long it's taken McGraw-Hill to implement this workflow from discovery phase to where you are now?
Sure. So like I mentioned, in my opinion, we're moving very quickly. We launched a pilot project, the biology title that Dana referenced, last spring. That was in May or April. And then we had the author that was our first author in the system. It was new to all of us. And he completed his content and his final product on schedule. So it met the traditional schedule that we had set up for that project. Like I said, we didn't introduce a lot of time saving because it was our first project. So now we're just really ramping up with additional titles in the system, and we're at the beginning stages of getting our authors trained and our teams trained and figuring out what our workflows are and just trying to get as much as our content as makes sense for us into the system right now. So from that one pilot, we've kind of just, like I said, really started to ramp up what makes most
Great.
Sense for us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like you've come quite a ways. It seems like you are moving quite quickly. And thank you for sharing your story. Dana, also thank you for your part, too. This was a great presentation, and I learned a lot myself. And so we're going to have to wrap things up for today. On behalf of Book Business and Inkling, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And I hope to see you all at the next Book Business webinar.